one's about to grow up. So if he notices that another person for whom he has respect and reverence looks at him aghast, he'll become discouraged. And he'll acquire a blush. It will interfere with his progress. How is the chizuk realized? How? By giving money now. By guidance and encouragement. By an iron table. You can break a child when it is on the verge of adolescence through the eye by looking at him. And you can make him by looking at him. It all depends how you look at him. If you talk to him and you look at him in an encouraging manner, if the child thinks that you have a nice opinion of him, then he'll become encouraged. He will become inspired, and he'll be willing to work and to dedicate himself. But if you talk to him in a discouraging manner, if you look at him aghast, if you give him an eye in awe, if you look at him with an evil eye, it's not the evil eye, it's the observation by the child of the evil eye. That has such awful consequences. So, in order that these lads might be redeemed from the curses that inhere in this potential blessing, the potential blessing has not only a bracha, but also a curse. It's a potential for a bracha and a curse. In order to redeem these lads from the possible curses that might flow from this potential blessing, so they have to be secure against an evil eye. If they are secure against an evil eye, if they will be encouraged, they will not be if they will not be discouraged, if no one will look aghast at them, if these rats will not think that they are black sheep, so then they'll be able to be fruitful and to multiply. Be careful. Now, we can very well understand, in line with what I mentioned before, the reason as to why Yaakov, in giving vent to his blessing to Ephraim and Menashe, mentioned the broche to Menashe in the broche to Ephraim and the broche to Ephraim in the broche to Menashe. Because there cannot be a chizuk ha-broche, there cannot be an actualization of the potential of blessing in one son if it is not coupled with an actualization of the potential of blessing in the other son. The chizuk ha-broche, the actualization of broche, has to integrate all the children of the household. So, in order that Ephraim could really lead a life so that he should be considered an example of blessing to all Jewish children, then it must be coupled with the blessing of Menashe. If Menashe is not blessed, then Ephraim will not assert himself fully. Then Ephraim will not be a good example of blessing. But then, something else is to be noticed in this bracha to Ephraim and Menashe. Now, in the bracha to Ephraim and Menashe, so Yaakov said, "Picho yivorech Yisroel eimer yisim chalekim k'Ephraim v'Menashe." That means that whenever a father is to bless his children, habol yivorech has bonof. Yivorechim bibirchosom, v'yeim aris libnei yisimcho elekim ki Ephraim v'chnash. They were declared as symbols of blessing. A similar expression is mentioned in the Torah in connection with Avram. In connection with Avram, so
we find...
Rashi says, Yesha Godis Rabbis, Vizeo Pshutei, Odomim El Ibnei, Teheke Avon, Vichain Kol Vinivricho, Bechosha Bimikro, Vize Mechiach, Becho Yivor Hisroel Emea, Yisimcho Elekim Ke Ephraim Vichimnash. So Avon was declared by God as a symbol of blessing, and Ephraim and Nashe were declared by God as a symbol of blessing. All the other Shvatim were not declared as a symbol of blessing. Only Ephraim and Asher. Why were Ephraim and Asher zeche to this merit of having something in common with Avraham Avinu? Now we can very well understand this why Avraham was declared as a symbol of blessing. Because Avraham was the first one. He was the one that paved the way for the dominion of God upon the earth. He was the first one to be Makir Azbeire. So it is only natural that he should be considered as an example of blessing. But why should Ephraim and Menashe, they did not pave any way for anyone. They only followed the footsteps of their ancestors. Why should they be declared as a symbol of blessing? Obviously, there is something in common between Avraham Avinu and Ephraim and Asher, which is not shared by the other Shvatim, not even by the other Ovis, by Yitzchak Eliyahu. What is that thing that was in common between Avraham and Ephraim and Asher? We find the expression, Tzadik Atomo Yifroch, Ki Erez Balvoni Yizge. That the righteous person blossoms like a palm tree. Many times I wondered why this metaphor is used. Why like a palm tree? Why not like the grape, like the vine? Why not like the apple tree? Why not like the orange tree? Why like the palm tree? But when I was in California for the first time, and as I noticed the way the palm tree grows, so I realized the meaning of Tzadik Atomo Yifroch, why the palm tree was taken as a metaphor for the progress of a righteous person. Now, those that were in Southern California know that the palm tree can grow on desert land. On land that no other tree will grow, the palm tree will grow. Why is it that other trees will not grow? Because if it's desert land, so there is no moisture. So a tree cannot grow without any water. But the palm tree strikes its roots deep. And when, so very deep in the ground, there is water. This is the reason as to why the palm tree can grow even on desert land where no other tree will grow. If we want to know what is the real criterion between a truly righteous person and an ordinary person, so it is not the fact that a righteous person deports himself in accordance with all the laws of justice and righteousness, whereas the ordinary person does not. The ordinary person can also deport himself properly if he is brought up in the proper environment. If the whole environment is conducive towards righteousness, towards justice, towards honesty and sincerity, then the average person will grow up as an honest and righteous and decent person. A man is analogous to the tree. A tree, in order to grow, requires certain factors. First, certain climatological factors. It requires soil, it requires sunshine, it requires oxygen, it requires water. Without these climatological factors, it cannot grow. The same is true of a man. Every man can grow if you have all the climatological factors. And in Germany, during the Weimar Republic, so you had as much of democracy as you have here in the United States, maybe more. This is a daring statement. Don't quote it. And I happened to pass through Germany when I was a child, when we went to America. Of course, you couldn't find an instance of a Jew being molested in the street. In Germany, you didn't find what you find now in the South. And the average German seemed to deport himself properly, like a gentleman. And I saw as a child, I took notice of the fact that when a Jewish lady entered the trolley car, so the Germans immediately stood up, they responded properly like gentlemen. But the same German who stood up before a lady, a Jewish lady, 7 years later, they pushed them into the gas chamber. So as long as there was a Weimar Republic in existence, as long as there was a constitution which guaranteed human rights to every resident in Germany, regardless of race or creed, so they deported themselves like decent people. But were they righteous people? No. They were like ordinary trees. Any tree can grow with all the climatological factors being satisfied. But a truly righteous person is one who can revolt against Nazism even when everyone says, Hail Hitler! There were only a few Germans who were able to do that. Only these few were truly righteous. The others were not righteous. The others were wicked all the time. Now, this is the meaning of Tzadik HaTomo Yifroch. Now, in the towns of Europe years ago, 50 years ago, 60 years ago, 70 years ago, 100 years ago, so the average Jew was very pious. There were no Michal Shabbats. There were no Echli Pevets. But then, when the Jews immigrated into this country, so they forgot about everything. They forgot the whole Jewish heritage. They abandoned the Shabbat, they abandoned Kosher, they abandoned Tarah Mishpah, they abandoned everything. But some Jews were able to resist the tempting environment that exists in America. These Jews were truly pious Jews. The others were never pious. They deported themselves in a pious way because in those towns in Europe you had all the climatological requirements for this kind of demeanor. Everything in those towns was conducive towards Gdusha, towards piety, towards Vira Shabbat, towards Kasher, towards Tarah Mishpocha. They were able to absorb it from the air. With the oxygen that they inhaled, they also inhaled all the concepts of Gdusha, of piety, of Chassidus. They were ordinary trees. But Tzadik HaTomo Yifroch, a tzadik, he can blossom forth like a palm tree, even on desert land, where you don't have all these climatological factors. How? In a vacuum? No. In a vacuum, even a tzaddik couldn't grow in a vacuum. The palm tree doesn't grow in a vacuum. The palm tree also grows because it is able to get some sustenance from the earth and to get some water, to absorb some moisture. But the palm tree strikes its roots deep. And when you strike your roots deep, then you get moisture, even on desert land. You can be truly righteous, truly pious, You can be the same kind of Thomas Hockham here as you had in Europe 100 years ago. It's a little more difficult. Why? Because here is desert land. But if you strike your roots deep, if you try to delve into the generations, so then you'll absorb everything. All the sustenance that there is. Now, Avrom was mentioned as an example of blessing. Why? Because true blessing does not consist in a proper demeanor under proper circumstances. Anyone can be pious if he is grown up in an environment that is fully conducive towards piety, towards Yerushalayim, towards fear of God and love of God, towards Arastere, towards righteousness and Kedusha and justice. Anyone can do that. But Avrom was brought up in a pagan world. Everything surrounding Avram's life was pagan, and still he was able to pave the way for the dominion of God upon earth. He was like Yitzhak. Yitzhak, he already had Avram as a father. Yaakov had Yitzhak as a father. And then, of course, the Shvatim, they had Yaakov as a father. But Ephraim and Menashe were in common with Avram. True, they were the sons of Yosef. Yosef was one of the Shvatim, but we all know very well that the child's character is not molded merely by the home. The home is only one factor in the molding of a child's character, but it's molded primarily by the general environment. And what kind of an environment was for Menashe brought up? In a pagan environment. An environment that was hostile to all the ideals of Avram. Hostile to the concepts of Zohar and Mishpat, as I discussed it. And still, they grew up as Hishtikyor. So they were like the palm tree. They were able to strike their roots deep. And they tried to be inspired not by the notions that prevailed in pagan Egypt, but by the notions that prevailed in the house of Avram, in the house of Yitzhak, in the house of Yaakov, in the house of Yosef. They resisted the tempting circumstances and the pagan glamour that they could have in Egypt. They were truly righteous people because they were able to blossom like a palm tree on desert land. So they were in common, they had something in common with Avram, and this is the reason as to why Ephraim and the Menashe are mentioned as examples of blessing. Because one is not blessed unless he is able to resist the tempting circumstances of the environment. Now, then, Yaakov proceeded with the formulation of his brachas to his sons. Now, these brachas that were directed to the respective sons were preceded by a preamble. And then he said, that preamble consisted of V'kofzu v'ishimu bnei Yaakov v'ishimu el Yisroel arich. Why did he have to mention this? We can take it for granted that even without his exhortation to the sons to pay attention, the sons would have paid attention anyway. After all, they're not students in Yeshiva University. So why did he have to say, now he mentioned, he referred to them in two ways. First as Bnei Yaakov, the sons of Yaakov. And then he also said, listen to Yisroel your father. Isn't it enough when he says to them, you listen, the sons of Yaakov listen? The sons of Yaakov means that Yaakov is the father. Why did he have to say, Shimuel Yisroel Avichem? Apparently, Apparently, Yaakov wanted to emphasize both aspects of the bracha. In other words, they had to take notice of the bracha from the point of view of Bnei Yaakov, and they also had to take notice of the bracha as children of Yisrael. Now, Bnei Yaakov obviously has reference to each son as an individual. Bnei Yaakov. Similar Yisroel Avichem has reference to the sons of Yaakov, to the house of Yaakov, as a unit, who have a common father. Now, each boy that was directed to the sons has a general aspect and a specific aspect. First of all, bracha means that a person asserts himself fully. What does it mean? That when God created the world, so he said that, so God blessed. What did the bracha consist in? In the realization of the potential that inheres in the world. So a bracha to Reuven consists in the realization of Reuven's potential. The realization of Reuven's potential must be commensurate with Reuven's peculiarities. The realization of Shimon's potential must be commensurate with Shimon's peculiarities. So there must be a specific aspect in each one's body. But then, they were not only individual sons of Yaakov. All the sons together constituted the house of Jacob. The house of Yisrael. They were to be considered as a unit. Like one person. So in order to realize the function, the tasks of a Jew as a member of the Knesset Yisrael, so they must be blessed with the attributes of a general blessing, not of a specific blessing. So there is a general feature attaching to each blessing, a feature that is common to all the blessings, and then there is a specific feature. Now, of course, the general feature consists in the attachment to the heritage of Avraham. That's the general feature. No matter what one Sheva does, to what he dedicates himself, whether he dedicates himself to commerce, as Zvulun did, or he dedicates himself to the study of the Torah and wisdom, as Yisrael did, or he dedicates himself to Malchus, as Yehuda did, whatever he does, but the Torah has to be the integral factor. The guiding principle. So there is a general feature and there is a specific feature. For this reason, Yaakov said to his sons, he calls to Rishimo, pay attention as the Yaakov, as individuals. Everyone should take notice of his own peculiar attributes, of his own peculiar aptitudes, and he should try to develop himself in accordance with his peculiar talents. If someone does not have any mathematical ability, so it will be preposterous for him to try to develop himself in mathematics. So you have to pay attention as Bnei Yaakov. And then, but don't think that by developing and asserting the peculiar aptitudes and talents, you'll fulfill your task. No, the important thing is to assert yourself as members of the house of Yisrael. The Torah has to be the heritage of Avraham, has to be the integral factor in your life, the guiding principle. No matter what you do, you have to be guided by the principles of the Torah. That's the Shimur Yisrael. Then Yaakov said, as to Reuven, he gave vent to a formula that does not seem to partake of any blessing. It partakes more of admonition of anything but a blessing. What did he tell him? He just reprimanded him for being so hasty, for being unstable. So how is it that Yaakov mentioned this admonition by way of blessing? The answer is that blessing consists, as I just mentioned, in the assertion, in the realization of one's potential. Now, so in order to guide Reuven properly, so Reuven had to take notice of his own weakness. If he doesn't take notice of his own weakness, he'll never be able to correct himself. That is real blessing. Blessing is not chnifa, it's not flattery. Blessing has two ingredients, the potential and the chizuk. Chizuk means the actualization. How can one actualize the potential if he doesn't know, if he doesn't take notice of his weak spots, of his weaknesses? So Yaakov had to mention the weak spots of Reuven. Now, what was the weak spot of Reuven? Actually, Reuven was a very tragic person. The fact is that Reuven arouses in us all the sympathy. And when one looks through the life of Reuven, superficially, so he might become impressed with the idea that it was unfair on the part of Yaakov to deprive him of the Torah. To Reuven sinned. He committed a sin. And didn't the other Shvatim commit sins? Chazal say that Yehuda committed sins, but he did tshuva when he said such come a man. And Reuven also did tshuva. Chazal say that the reason as to why Reuven disappeared for some time when they put him in the pit is because he was engaged in his tshuva activities. So he did tshuva. So how is it that Yehuda's sin was forgiven because of tshuva and Reuven's sin was not forgiven? And then if we compare or contrast this the failure on the part of Yehuda with the failure on the part of Yosef, of Reuven, so it seems that Reuven's sin was of little significance. Because what was his sin? When Rachel died, so Yaakov put Bilhah's couch into his tent. And that aroused the resentment by Reuven. He said, as long as Rachel was alive, I could at least understand. He didn't like it that Yaakov preferred Rachel to Leah, but he could understand it. He could forgive Yaakov. But now that Rachel is dead, and it's a question between his mother, the real wife of Yaakov, and the handmaid of Rachel, so why should the handmaid of his mother get a better treatment than his mother? This is the so what did he do? So he put Leah's couch in Yaakov's tent. That was the sin. Of course it was a sin. It certainly did not harmonize with the mandate of Kibbutz Ahav towards Yaakov. But one can very well understand as to why Reuven was provoked into this act. It was his intense attachment and devotion and love towards his mother. And he could not tolerate the humiliation of his mother. True, he had to control himself. He did not control himself. He was too hasty. Maybe he should have discussed it with Yaakov. And instead, he himself took the initiative and put his mother's couch into Yakov's tent. So he failed. But you would have failed much more miserably when he advised his brothers to sell their own brother. So Yehuda was forgiven. Reuven was not forgiven. And you are my might, he said, and you are the fruits of my strength. And this is to be interpreted in a spiritual sense, as I explained it, because all the ambitions, all the unattained ambitions of a father are centered upon the older son. A father always strives to attain through his oldest son that which he himself wanted to attain and failed to attain. So his race is saying, Yeser says, V.S.R.s, and consequently, because of the special attention that I pay to you on account of the fact that you are my paw, and I centered all my ambitions on you, more than upon anyone else, so you are entitled to a preeminence in dignity and to preeminence in oz. Yeser says, according to Chazal, as reference to Kohuno, Yeser Oz as reference to Malchus. He was entitled, and Yaakov wanted him to attain this preeminence. This is the right of spiritual primogeniture. But Pachas Kamayim Altesa. He was a noble person, Reuven. Reuven did not participate in the sale of Yosef. He tried to save Yosef. He was the only one. He was engaged in tshuva over his sin. But he had one weakness. He was unstable. He was too hasty. He did not have the midas ha-tzimtzum. The bas oisor avrom avinu bakeu shmo. As the Ramban explains it, it means a measure. Bas means measure. Doesn't mean a dara. It means a measure. The midas ha-tzimtzum of restraint. Of being able to restrain certain qualities. Because there is not one laudable quality. There are many laudable qualities. So therefore one has to be limited by the other. Why did Reuven fail? Because he was so attached to his mother, his love and devotion toward his mother was without limit. So because of the fact that his love to his mother was without limits, he undermined the authority of the father. He liked the middle of symptom of restraint, of limitation, of limiting one middle by another. The middles have to be balanced. Of limitation, of limiting one middle by another. The middles have to be balanced. He was unstable. He was hasty, called Lisa Mystery of Dicha, in order to vindicate the rights of your mother you disgraced. Your father's dignity. Oschilauto Yitzui. Oschilauto Yitzui Olo. And by that, according to Chazal, it means you disgraced the Shechina. All has reference to the Shechina. Now this was not a sin committed by Reuven as an individual, but Reuven as a poor, and in those days he was entitled to spiritual primogeniture, to Kohuno and to Malchus. He was really the leader of the house. His task was to assist Yaakov in guiding the whole family. What kind of an example did he set to the family, when he undermined the authority of Yaakov, when he took the initiative into his own hands and put the bed of his mother in Yaakov's tent. So he failed in his capacity as a leader, in his capacity as a paw. So his sin can be forgiven. Of course it was forgiven. But he thereby disqualified himself as a queen, as a melech, as the leader of the house, as the one who is to assist Yaakov in guiding the whole family. Yosef proved himself more worthy as a leader. So the spiritual primogeniture had to be taken away from Reuven and had to be conferred upon Yosef. Now Chazal say, in respect to the passage, I'm finishing, I think. So, a few minutes. In respect to the passage of so Chazal say in the Medrash, Shilmoli o Yedea, Ruvein, Shatero, Pesheves, Olo, Vayosef, Ruvein, Rabeir, Hoyo Makive, Hoyo Makive, Shilmoli,